Sarah Ann Walker back to the stage, filmmakers Steve James and Peter Zauber.
So I think I learned an amazing amount. And also what I learned too was being born that sort of, I guess, more to the left, you know, being, was seeing Reverend Pickett examining his change over a period of 15 years. That it wasn't something that was overnight for him. It was something that was really a lifelong struggle for him. And it was really fascinating. And also one thing, our producer, co-producer of Sound and Zap Piper is here.
Yes,
the DA that you've seen in the film contends to this day that they got the right guy and they took the right guy to death. The state of Texas will never pardon him. There's no DNA evidence. And they'll never pardon him also because it would keep the state of them be liable in so many ways, legally and monetarily. And plus, it's Texas. They're just not, you know, going by, I hate to say it like that, but it's Texas. They're just not going to go any further with it. And, I think you see that's a lot of someone like Rose's pain in the film is the idea that her, you know, I think she knows deep down that her brother's not going to be part of it.
At what point in your relationship with him did it first mention cassettes? Did you realize immediately that those would be the sort of the organizing point of the film?
When did we realize about the cassettes? We actually knew about the cassettes from the Tribune reporters. initial meeting with them, talking about the possibilities of the film, they talked about him, they talked about the 9-5 men, they talked about that he had ministered to, and that he'd been there for the first lethal injection, and that he believed Carlos was innocent, and then he said, oh yeah, and he recorded these audio cassettes. I mean, after each execution, and it was like, wow. And have you heard anything? Well, we heard the Carlos one, and it's pretty amazing. So that pretty much sealed the deal, you know, in terms of wanting to do this film for us. And it's interesting, if you, after that meeting, found out that he had written a memoir called Within These Walls, which is out of print but available if you're interested to read it. It's a really interesting memoir. And in that memoir, there's no mention of the tapes at all. He did not, he really, as you learn in the film, his family didn't even, you know, Jane knew about him, of course, because he was recording them while she was marrying him, but his kids didn't even know the existence of the tapes until we were there that weekend filming. So I think it was, this was clearly, you know, from the get-go, we said to him, we, you know, know about the tapes from Steve and Maury, and we're going to want to make that a part of this film. And, you know, I think he was ready to deal with that at that point in a way that even in the memoir that he'd written a few years earlier, he was not. And there was a real, you know, process of, I think we got along really great from the start with Reverend Pickett. He mentioned when we premiered the film at South by Southwest, you know, in Texas, in the Q&A, he mentioned the audience that he had decided in his mind that he had given us a month to sort of prove ourselves that this was the right thing to do, which we didn't know until he said that at South by Southwest. We were happy not to know, actually. And I think that, you know, that trust kind of happened fairly quickly. And but it was still a process throughout the 2 years that it took to make the film of constantly sort of revisiting and digging and to get him to express that.
So of those 95 stories, probably very worthy stories, how would the handful cherry-picked to be included in the movie?
I was, you know, that was hard. I mean, there are two other tapes that we spent significant time with that are not in the movie that will be on DVD. Yeah, I think it was a very, and we rake ourselves over the coals about this. In fact, on the walkover, we were raking ourselves.
Talking about trying to put more tapes in or not.
Yeah. I mean, it was not easy. I think that we our gut told us that to put too many tapes, it would get to a point where it would have less impact for the audience, and we weren't frankly sure how much an audience could take of watching a man listen to tapes and just have that be a part of the story. And I think it worked out very strongly. And Peter, who also shot the movie, and I think did a terrific job of visualizing. You know, when we spent a lot of time in that office of visualizing that and sort of getting in on his face while he was listening, because we feel like that reveals a lot about how he's reacting. Because he hadn't listened to those tapes, with the exception of Carlos, he hadn't listened to those tapes since he recorded them.
It was interesting, too, I think the tapes that we chose are representative of those 95. I mean, the first tape is interesting because that's probably the only tape, we were talking about this earlier, but it's probably the only tape that I think that when he recorded it, he had a sense that it was history that he was recording, that he was, you know, witnessing something for the first time, and it was a historical moment.
And how painful that was for him to be a part of it.
Very quickly, as you listen to those things, they become very different. It's not about history, it's about him and how he's feeling after witnessing that. And the Quaves tape obviously made sense to use, and how it seemed like the right thing.
Right. Although again, we feel like, oh, maybe we should put more tapes.
So pretty good.
Get the DVD. Yeah. Do you have a
question? The Reverend coming across is kind of like if Sheldon Quinn was actually at the Civil War, and I'm wondering how you grew up.
Bud is a very personable guy. If you were here, we wish he was here tonight, and you just were chatting with him, you find him very amicable and sweet-natured and funny. But he is also of a certain generation that tends to be more closed, and I think we try to draw out and explain some of where that came from, his upbringing and everything. And I think that, you know, he is a guy that the only way he could have done that job, I think, was to, in a way, be that kind of guarded, tough man that he is. And I think that the process of interviewing him was a process of constantly revisiting, with him on the tapes and the meaning of the tapes and the meaning of the experience, all the various aspects of what he went through. And, he would tell us periodically throughout the process that this was the therapy he never really got, was making this film. And I think that he meant that as a compliment, and that's really great for us. We feel like any kind of film, the making of a film, can actually do something for your subjects, not just for you as filmmakers. It's a great thing. And even though it was painful for him, he was glad he went through this process. And there were times, though, when given how painful it was, where I would just turn to Peter if we'd been there for a few days, and I'd be like, we just have to get out. We gotta get out of here. We gotta go.
This is too much. And I also think he wanted to leave a different kind of legacy to his kids. I think it was important to him. He couldn't really talk to them, but the process, I think, of making a film with us over a period of time gave him the opening for us to actually talk with his children about being in prison, and it then gave them the opening to start asking questions. And I think it was very important to him. He was ready. It was that time where he was ready to open up.
He's 72 years old. I mean, that scene in the movie where Anne, his daughter, says, tell me, you know, they had that discussion on the dinner table. They had never had that discussion before. I mean, we didn't reenact that. That just happened. We didn't put the camera down.
We were silent.
He said, Daddy, if I were raped, like, stop. And it's, you know, and I think that, you know, all of his kids told us individually after the premiere in Austin, we had given him permission to show the film to them before the premiere, but Bud has a full sense of drama. He didn't want them to see it. We didn't find out until they came to Austin. So they saw it for the first time at Austin, and each one of them came up to us individually afterwards and basically in their own different ways said that they learned something about their father tonight that you know, they did not know, and that it had, you know, the process of this film for them
his son, who was sitting near us, he looked down at when the film premiered. He looked down and he was texting during the film. It was really creepy. And he was texting his wife, telling her about things in the film because he was so nervous about actually coming to see the film, what it would be like. And for him, I think being his son, I think being Bud's son is not necessarily thing in the world to be, and I think it's something that really has helped them, you know, find a much more common bond.
One more question.
How well received was it in Texas? Was it well received in Texas?
Yeah. Absolutely. We showed it South by Southwest as a premiere. We thought that was the appropriate place for this film to premiere. And
now that's the other Texas.
Yeah.
But it's the capital where a lot of efforts to change are happening. And it was a terrific response. Then we showed it in Dallas. We went to the Dallas Film Festival because we really want to show it in Texas wherever we can. There's going to be showings in Houston. It's going to be in San Antonio and different cities around Texas that approached us to say they'd like to show it. So.
I mean, I think Texans understand that a lot of people from all over the world, when they hear the word Texas, they think about what goes on in Texas and the death penalty. And so I think they're open for discussion, and hopefully, you know, the film will open up some areas for them to talk into. And there's a lot of legislation going on there now, so we'll see.
Well, and anecdotally, this is purely anecdotally, we've know, I think the challenge with any kind of any document.